And it's 25 minutes after the hour on a Tuesday morning. We're joined by Dr. Don Clark. Don is a biochemist, a member of the board of Creation Moments. He resides in Garden Valley, Texas, which is, in fact, a garden spot. In fact, it's East Texas, so it's... Do you consider yourself Central Texas, Don?
No, East Texas.
East Texas, okay, because you're almost, yes. Almost Louisiana there. Yeah, I know. David's up in the news chair in the East Dakota, though, so he'll be part of this discussion. And we wanted to get Don as an expert teacher on the book of Genesis. And from the creation to the flood to Abram and Abraham. I was curious today about Abraham's history in particular. He is so fundamental. It's like he is the patriarch. He is the center of Judaism. But why not Noah? Or why not Adam? And somehow Abraham got center stage here, and I'm interested to know what caused that. But also about his travels, he was born in Ur, that you are, and that's pretty close to where Babylon was in history. And he and his clan was he told to move? Did God tell him to go to Haran?
We don't get that necessarily from Genesis, because it was Terah, his father, who left, and then took his son Abram at that time, and his grandson Lot, and then the son of Haran and his daughter-in-law Sarai, who obviously became Abraham's wife. Mm-hmm.
We have to be conscious of life in clans in that day and age. That was roughly 4,000 years ago. And Terah, Abram's father, was in the line of Shem, apparently born, according to to Shem's genealogy in Genesis 11, apparently born about 200 years after the flood. And so they up and moved with all their slaves and their livestock, and their clan relocated from Ur to a place called Haran. Now, Haran was the name of one of Terah's sons. Would have been a brother of Abram, but he died in Ur, Haran. And yet, this clan up and moved to a place called Haran, 660 miles to the northeast of Ur. Abram was destined to go to Israel, but why Haran first? I'm questioning God here, you know. I just want to know what the purpose of that move was, because he was in Haran for a number of years until his father died, and that made him probably the head of the clan, so he could make the decision. And he said, "We're going to Israel."
Well, this is all very interesting, and why the stopover in Haran. And part of it may be the father himself, Terah, because Ur was a place that worshipped the moon. And, of course, God wasn't interested in them worshiping the moon. He was interested in them worshiping him. And so, apparently, Haran is another place that worshiped the moon. So they would, Terah would have felt quite comfortable going to another place that worshiped the moon that was away from Ur. Now, it doesn't say why they left Ur of the Chaldeans. Maybe it was starting to get a little crowded, and so they needed more space for the clan, and so they upped and moved.
Is it fair to say that God stimulated this somehow? I mean, it was part of his plan. He must have had something to do with this, and I'm wondering, that 660 miles of travel across the desert with a clan and animals and slaves and all that would have been excellent training for what was to come for Abram.
Well, it would have, but the Bible doesn't speak to it, you know, because it doesn't say that God told Terah to to up and move out of the Ur of the Chaldeans, out of that area, and go to the land of Canaan. So it does specifically say that the Lord spoke to Abram and told him to get out of your country. And so if the country was still worshiping the moon, then God, one, would be interested in getting, the father of the Jewish people out of the chosen people out of that particular environment and to go to another environment. But maybe God had a hand in it and, prompted Terah to move his family. Part of his family, at least his clan.
And now his son Haran had died in Ur, and yet the place that they're going to is called Haran. Now I can't resist trying to fill in some of the blanks here. Let's hypothesize this: the clan moved up to an area that was sparsely populated. Maybe they worshipped the moon. But they were conquered by Abram and perhaps militarily, and they named the place after Terah's son, who had passed away in Ur. What do you think of that?
That's a possibility. I don't know if there's any extra biblical information that would lead us to believe. Maybe if I had looked in the book of Jasher, we might find some additional information.
The book of Jasher. I forgot about that. That's another trusted source for this kind of information, isn't it?
Yeah, it would have given, it could have possibly given a little bit more details here about exactly why they moved and why they stopped, why Terah stopped at that particular place. But we do know that he dies. He dies in Haran. And that gives God freedom, if you will, to call upon Abram to get to Canaan, which was the spot that God wanted them to be in the first place. In chapter 12 starts that particular story. And the Lord tells Abram to get out of town, basically, get out of your country, and from your family, interestingly enough. So he's going to leave some folks behind, and he's being told to get out of that particular region.
Well, he would have taken whatever he inherited after Terah died, right?
Well, of course.
And that's the custom.
He takes Sarai, which is, going to become Sarah.
Oh, and yes, I'm sorry. Sorry, one more note. I hate to interrupt like this, but I'm looking back at this genealogy from Shem and Terah. Abram would have been the first son. If the order it says that Terah had lived 70 years, he became the father of Abram, Nahor, and Haran. So if he was son number one, he would have inherited the lion's share of Terah's estate. So he would have resources to go with, yeah.
I would tend to, there's some that would kind of say that Haran was the first son, but I would agree with you because of the order that's in the Bible, that it would point to Abram being possibly the first son. Mm-hmm. And so he would have inherited all that. But he only takes, himself and his wife, and he takes Lot, his nephew, with him, who was the son of Haran. And so his dad wasn't around at that time, and had probably died in Ur, and so didn't go with Terah at the time. And so, he takes this entourage, and I'm sure they had, slaves and other folks and a lot of cattle or a lot of sheep that they had built up by that time. And so this is not necessarily an easy move to just pick up and go, but they were, you know, they're pretty much nomadic, you know, people. They would stay in a spot, but they still probably lived in tents, and it wasn't like they had built any structures or anything other than having tents. So God directs Abram then to go to Canaan, and he says, look, go to Canaan. You know, I want you to, you know, get out of town, take your family, you know, leave your father's family, you know, kind of behind, come out of your father's house and go to the land that I will show you, and I will make you a great nation, and I will bless you and make your name great, and you shall be a blessing. And I will bless those who bless you, and I will curse him who curses you. And in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed. So God then clearly indicates that Abram is special, in that his lineage from that point on would be special as well. Now, he's not going to have any sons because Sarah is barren, and so he didn't have any children at this time. But that was for another story. Now, Abram's probably about 75. Abram is about probably 75 at this point, so he's got some growing up to do, and Sarah's got some aging to do before you know, God comes to him and comes to Sarah, or the angel does, and says, "You're gonna have, by this time next year, you're gonna have a son." And you know, by this time, Sarai takes matters into her own hands, and if you remember the story, she offers one of the slave gals to Abram so that the lineage could be, you know, propagated, and Abram's not gonna, you know, be without a lineage. But that was man's doing, or in this case, woman's doing, that caused that particular problem, and not God's will. So God knew what he was doing, and he knew, interestingly enough, here's this patriarch of a Jewish people who has a wife that is barren, God telling Abraham to get out of your country, go to the land that I've shown you, I'm going to bless you, and the nations are going to be blessed, and all the peoples of the earth are going to be blessed through you. If you read this, you know, this particular passage, you know, for yourself, you would say that, wow, that's quite a blessing. What in the world is God thinking about, you know, in telling Abram this? And what is Abram thinking? You know, he's going to be out of his family, or everybody on the earth is going to be blessed. I mean, he had to, because he knew the messianic, promises, obviously, that God was going to send his son to save mankind.
Now you bring up a point, and I'm going to, you know, God works in patterns. And you can identify trends in ways of doing things from the Old Testament, transfer them to the New, and you get some amazing links. Now, I'm wondering if Abraham and Sarah, being of advanced age, much too old to have kids, actually have a kid, a son. Now, I think of Zechariah and Elizabeth in the Judean hills. And some would insist that that's the real story of Advent. It begins with them. Elizabeth was barren, and they were both advanced in years, and they had a son who turned out to be John the Baptist. And even in Jesus' words, he was, I don't want to say incarnation, but he represented the return of Elijah and paved the way for the Messiah. That there's similarities here, and I don't know that's legitimate. But it's intriguing.
Yes. Well, it's all prophetic. It's all part of the prophetic pattern that God uses, because he's going to establish the Israelites, obviously, from Abram. And at that point, Abram's name gets changed to Abraham, which means father of many nations. And so God's got a plan for, Abram's life.
Name change
has a plan for all of our lives.
Name change is significant too, because the name Zechariah means whom God remembers. And the idea there is they'd prayed for a child for a long time. And finally in the temple, an angel comes to Zechariah and says, you will have a son and you're to name him John.
Right.
the similarities are stunning. And this sort of recognition of the patterns to me is convincing that this whole story of God and creation and the Messiah and ultimate salvation is true. I mean, so many clues.
Very much so, because this is branching off from the Abram story.
That's legal, Don. We can do that.
Okay, yeah. A little bit. We're approaching the Christmas season, right? We're in the Christmas season, if you will, and
accepted rabbit holes.
Okay, so we're going to go down a little rabbit hole in this whole theme of, if you will, God planning things well in advance. In Luke and Matthew, you hear the stories. It recounts the Jesus's birth and Mary and Joseph, and they come to Bethlehem, and there's no room for them, so they have to be in a stable. Which was probably on the ground floor of the house, the house there. Jesus is born. The angels come to the shepherds and say, behold, peace on earth, goodwill to men. And eventually in that scenario, sometime later, I don't believe it was the day that Jesus was born, obviously, but it was a little bit later, these men from the east bring the Messiah, the young Jesus, bearing three gifts. Now, because they bared three gifts, people get the idea that there were three wise men, and they weren't necessarily, wise. They were trained, but they weren't necessarily wise, but they came from the east. There is a good possibility that these folks were actually disciples of Daniel. So
Babylon,
Daniel
from was, Babylon, you're saying?
Yes. Mm-hmm. They were disciples of Daniel, and so they would have been called the Magi. I mean, they were called the Magi, but were another word for that is magicians. Now, they didn't perform magic tricks, if you will, but they had this ability because Daniel taught them how to, read the signs and the seasons. And we know from Genesis 1, for example, that the stars are placed in the sky for signs and seasons. Well, this was one of those seasons when the Messiah was going to be born. And if Daniel instructed them, look for this particular sign in the heavens, because that will lead you to the Messiah who is coming, which he most probably, would have done.
Now, of course, we should get back to the timeline here, because the timeline of Daniel is with the captivity to Babylon. So we're talking 6th century B.C. So this would have been a tradition instilled by Daniel. Daniel's teaching word of mouth, written papers maybe, so that these people in the year, oh, roughly 4 BC, let's say 2 years after Christ's birth, responded to Daniel's message of old.
Correct? Of old. I mean, yeah. Very old, right? Yeah. And so these folks were, you know, still studying these things this many years later, because Daniel must have instilled with them the importance of the arrival of the Messiah. And so, you know, Abram's playing a part here in this whole scenario. And when, you know, God tells him that, you know, all the families of the earth shall be blessed, it is pointing to the Messiah, and it is pointing to Jesus. And so here the Messiah gets born. Daniel's involved in this whole thing. The Magi come, you know, from the east, you know, Daniel's disciples, if you will, and bearing three gifts. And those three gifts are important, the frankincense, you know, gold and myrrh, myrrh pointing to his being crushed, because you got to crush the myrrh in order to get the fragrance out of it.
It's a crucifixion reference then. Yeah.
Yes. And gold, of course, being for kings, and frankincense, I'm not remembering at the moment, but the priestly line, I think. So the gifts are in themselves, you know, important as to who this young baby was, and why the wise men or the magi came from the east to visit, and why God set that up. You know, why did he set that up, and why has it become, you know, so important for the Christmas message and the Christmas story today? And it's to remind people that, you know, with God, nothing is an accident. You know, it was no accident that Terah died in Haran, that he stopped in Haran, and then he died, and then God tells Abram to move on and to leave, you know, his heritage there, and then to form a new colony, if you will, or a new clan, and to move to Canaan, which, of course, is going to eventually become Israel. And everything that God does is, you know, he planned it well in advance. And we're just seeing it played out. And that's, you know, that's why I love the Old Testament, is because it's a history book, and it's prophetic. I mean, you find statements like, you know, it would be outrageous to make a statement like, and all the families of the earth shall be blessed. I mean, what would Abram, you know, thinking at that point, other than God must have a plan for my life, you know?
I wonder if Abram was a rebel. I mean, worshiping the moon made no sense to him. He must have been receptive to God's message somehow. And
this whole family here is, as you pointed out, was a lineage from Shem. And Shem was the godly line of the three brothers, Japheth, Shem, and Ham. Shem was carrying on the godly line. And so even, you know, way back in Noah's time, God had already chosen the lineage as to which, you know, obviously Jesus is going to come out of. But Abram then brings folks back from this worshiping of the moon to now worshiping the one true God. And that is going to ultimately lead to the Messiah.
David, you had a thought?
I did, but I forgot what it was.
Well, okay.
I'm still thinking. I'm still wrapping my head around the idea that Sarah offered up one of the girls in the harem, or one of the servant girls, for Abraham to practice on.
Hagar.
Practice. And practice is not exactly the right word, but that's, I mean, you know, back in your phrase, Don, that none of this happens without God's finger in it. What would that be about?
This has to do with the son Ishmael coming from Hagar, being the patriarch of Arabs. I mean, that there's where the division between Jew and Arab starts, and then you can introduce Islam as well on an Ishmael side. So that's a huge turning point in history, because Hagar and her son were kicked out of Abraham's group there.
But when they are, God blesses them. God blesses them when they're kicked out, and basically says, "You're going to be okay. I'm going to take care of you."
Mm-hmm.
So it does work into God's plan, and if you will, there's going to be this tension, always this tension between Isaac, who ultimately, is the firstborn, of Sarah, obviously, and Ishmael, in that clan. But the clans separate at that point. Well, of course, Isaac isn't born yet, but God blesses, blesses Hagar, and blesses Ishmael. And basically tells, no harm's going to come to you. You're going to be a great nation yourself, which is an interesting thing. So even when man, or in this case woman, takes matters into their own hands, because, Sarai, I mean, she heard and probably understood, a little bit as to what God was saying back here in Genesis 12. And here all these years are passing. She's not getting any younger. She's not having any children. And so she kind of offers, Abram this alternative to help God along in his plan.
And we should also mention that a woman being barren was a huge disadvantage in those cultures, as it was in Bible times. It was
very much so.
Unless you could produce a son for your husband, you weren't worth much, and you were essentially an outcast in the culture. So all that is significant too, and it weaves into just a huge story contained in the Bible there. And even the genealogies have such significance. In fact, just in mentioning the genealogy in Genesis, you mentioned how that predicts the coming of Christ by the meaning of the names in the order which they're presented. I mean, this is astounding stuff. And Don, we're always grateful for what you bring to us here, and our eyes have been opened a little bit wider here as we progress through this Tuesday. So, Don, thanks so much. I should mention creationmoments.com. That's the website for Creation Moments. I mentioned that Don is a member of the board there. Their specialty is scientific information that supports the biblical story of creation. So if you want to argue for God as creator, that's a good place to start and go over some of those materials written and audio. Take a look at it, creationmoments.com. Don, we'll talk to you next week. It'll be technically Christmastide next week. We're in Advent now, but I think Thursday is the beginning of the actual Christmastide in the liturgical church. So we'll look forward to next Tuesday and see you then.
Okay, very good. Yeah. I'll be around. So
all right, look forward to that.
Yep, y'all have a great week and a great Christmas.
Thank you. You too.
I got your card, Don.
Oh, good.
I did too. Thank you very much. Yeah.
Thank
pretty
you
special.
Much.
We'll see you
next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.